Revenue Committee Agenda, January 21st, 1981, 1:30 p.m., Hearing Room 137, State Capitol Building. Orientation, Final Property Tax Presentation by Jim Scherzinger, Economist, Legislative Revenue Office. Inheritance and Gift Tax, Steve Meyer, Economist, Legislative Revenue Office. If Time Permits, Personal Income Tax, Ron Chastain, Economist, Legislative Revenue Office. Tape 3, Side A.
What we'll do, you have an agenda in front of you on orientation, and we'll ask Jim to finish his presentation. The committee clerk will note those present, and Senator Powell is excused for business of the Senate. And if you will, you go ahead, and what we'll try to do when you've reached a certain stage, Jim, like we did yesterday, we'll stop and have you explain what you're trying to get across to us. Is that okay? Okay, fire away. Good afternoon.
I really don't have that much to go on the property tax. I just wanted to say a little bit about the administration of it and give you some data, some recent data, historical data about the property tax, and then you can get on to your other taxes, of which there are many. So I thought I'd put down sort of six principal actors in this, other than the taxpayer, and we can talk about each one in turn. As it starts with the property tax and the administrative side with the county assessor. The county assessor has, and maybe this is not as widely appreciated, has a role both on the levy side and on the value side, not just on the value side. So the local taxing districts, when they determine their levies and they go to the voters and they get approval of the levies, they do have to certify to the assessor the amounts of those levies, and the assessor does have a role in looking at that and verifying that those were in fact legally, that all the legal requirements were adhered to and that those are legal levies. So they have that role, just as they have the role of determining the value of property. And then, of course, once they get the two, they put them together to determine the tax rates, etc. And once the tax rates are determined and the tax bills are computed, then the role is turned over to the tax collector, and the tax collector collects the tax, sends out the statements and collects the tax. In some counties, these are the same people. In other counties, they are not. Also on the local scene, there's what's called the Board of Equalization. And under the new plan, that board meets twice now, but once in the spring for most of its duties and once in the winter for the homestead appeals. And they do two things. One, they look at the tax roll prepared by the county assessor and the ratio studies that the county assessor does. The ratio studies are looking at sales prices versus what property was assessed at. And so they'll look at that, try to look at the overall equity on the assessor's roll, and they'll also take individual appeals. If an individual wants to appeal their value, they can first go to the county assessor and see if they can talk the assessor into changing it, which happens sometimes. The assessor realizes they made a mistake. Then if not happy with what the assessor does, they can go to the Board of Equalization and see if they see if the taxpayer convinced the Board of Equalization that the value is wrong.
Question, Senator Monroe.
In your estimation, do the assessors ever, when somebody comes to them and challenges their assessment, they ever bump that down a little bit, even though they really think that their figures are probably correct, just to get past the hassle of having to go to court?
Not to my knowledge.
In other words, is there any plea bargaining that goes on?
I'm sure that the assessor, in talking to the taxpayer, has all those things in his mind, but it might vary from assessor to assessor, and I would think it would be a good policy on the part of the assessor to do that, because
I didn't ask you that.
I would think that would be a weak assessor that would do that. I think an assessor that is looking at the long term, even for his own benefit, not just for the county's benefit or for the taxpayer's benefit, for equity benefit, for his own benefit, would realize if they start making deals that it's going to come back at them eventually, and they're just going to cause more problems in the long run.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say that's never happened, and it certainly does happen. Widely known in other states, I feel better about our system.
Any other questions? Senator Trow.
Yeah, just a couple of questions about the Board of Equalization. I don't know too much about it. Does the board meet all the time?
No, it meets now. It used to only meet in the spring, and at about the time when tax appeals would be taken.
Who's on it usually?
There are three members: a county commissioner, a member of the budget committee of the county, and a private citizen, not a public official, that's selected by one of the other two.
Is it paid? Some people are paid,
not,
obviously.
No, it's not paid.
It's not paid.
It can be larger than 3-2, as I recall. I think you can.
You can form, if you think that there is too much work for the three people to do, you can appoint a B board, have an A board and a B board, and then send some. The A board still controls, but they can send some cases to the B board, and the B board will handle it. So you can expand it in that way.
Now, you mentioned both an individual evaluation for individuals and a total overall evaluation.
Right.
What's the significance of the overall evaluation? Is it after the fact, after the assessment's been done, and after the taxes are collected, or after the sleep?
It's after the values are originally determined by the assessor. So this is done at the spring meeting of the board. So the value notices may go out in May.
Okay.
The board could still order a change in those values.
Good.
And in fact, I think it happened up in Multnomah County this year. I'm not sure if that was the board or the Department of Revenue that ordered that change. I was always confused about that. But up in Multnomah County, they ordered a change in one entire reappraisal area where they lowered the values.
So that does happen.
That does happen, yeah.
Finish, Senator Trump. Senator Jernstein?
Well, there's one little, well, I think of it again, I was going to bring it up, and that is, then concerns the Board of Equalization. And I looked at those statutes a little bit. And I just wonder how long it's been since anybody really did anything about it. And some of the processes that as I remember, were a little bit archaic and a little bit discomforting as far as taxpayers are concerned. And I mentioned this to the interim committee, and Chairman Grinnell wanted to do it, but we never got to it this last time. And if there was any bit of time around here, I just think that somebody ought to just look at those statutes and maybe make some changes in them, because there's some procedures there that are a little bit disconcerting. If you
we got a little time on our hands. Why don't you get together with some of the staff and maybe work up something for us?
I will.
Put it on our agenda.
Just give me a staff member.
All right. Would you, Jim, work closely with Senator
Jernstein
and see what you could, maybe you could work up kind of a description memo.
I'd like to do that. And just maybe I'm just whistling Dixie and barking up the wrong tree or something. But
I think that'd be very constructive. And since you volunteered, Senator Jernstein will be working with you.
Thanks for volunteering.
In about a week, we'll kind of look at your product. Okay.
Problems.
Further questions, Senator Instead.
No question.
Can we proceed ahead, folks? Okay, let's move ahead a little bit.
One thing that I would mention about that maybe is that because we did last session move to two boards, now one with the homesteads, is that there is some things in the tax plan revisions that are going to deal with how these boards are structured. Because
one thing I'd point out to you, to the committee, if someone asked the question, what would they look at besides an individual assessment? Well, if the revenue had informed them that their ratio was too low, and they indeed have not been able to either do the on-site assessments, and they did trending, there may be some argument over the application of their trending, and that would be something they would examine overall, I believe, wouldn't
right,
Jim?
That's right.
Okay. Well, let's forge ahead, yeah.
Okay, then on to the Department of Revenue. Department of Revenue has the responsibility, sort of like the county assessor, but from the state's point of view, of enforcing the laws that you pass about property tax. And so they have a responsibility both on the levy side and on the value side. So on the levy side, they have to work all the way from the local budget law. And they even have a local budget section up in the Department of Revenue where these different districts do have to, after they file their levies with the county assessor, they have to be forwarded up to the Department of Revenue and they have to review them. And it works all the way through on the levy side to the point of where the taxes are levied and where the Department of Revenue has the power to order corrections to the roll and to order, even after the fact, adjustments and that kind of thing if they find that things were done illegally. So they have the responsibility to determine that everything was done legally. And it goes all the way from conducting the elections to adopting the budget to the methods of accounting that are used, if they're just done improperly. If they're using money that's supposed to be dedicated for one purpose and somehow they manage to get it over another purpose, they have powers to deal with those kinds of things because things were done illegally. They also have a role on the value side in reviewing the ratio studies that Senator Day mentioned. In performing a mapping function for district boundaries and that kind of thing. And they do some of their own assessments of value. The utilities, the centrally assessed utilities, are done by the Department of Revenue, and those values have been certified to the counties. They do some big industrial properties, determination of their value. They do some industrial properties that the counties contract with them to do. If the county assessor feels that the county doesn't have the expertise to value a certain type of property, they can contract with the department to do it. And I think they split the cost 50-50 right now. The Department of Revenue is very active in the property tax area. And by and large, most of these functions are in what's called the A&A division, Assessment and Appraisal Division. Also in that division is the timber severance tax people too, which isn't directly tied to the property tax except through the offset procedure now because we have shifted out of the property tax into the severance. Then, as far as appeals go, if somebody goes to their county assessor and county assessor says, I disagree with the value you want to put on it, they go to the Board of Equalization, the board disagrees with the person wants to appeal further, the next appeal is to the Department of Revenue, and then if the Department of Revenue finds that or doesn't uphold or doesn't satisfy the purpose of the taxpayer, they can then appeal to the tax court. And if that doesn't satisfy the taxpayer or the department, then it can be appealed to the Supreme Court.
Go ahead, Senator.
Question is, at what point in that appeal process would the taxpayer have to obtain an attorney? How far could he go on his own, is what I'm saying. Because that's a pretty important ingredient. If you have to hire an attorney, sometimes, you know, it's costing you more than the trouble.
I think some people hire an attorney almost right away. And
well, I realize that, but
further. I've never really been through the process enough to know.
For example, you couldn't go to the tax court or the Supreme Court without an attorney.
That's true.
Could you go to the Department of Revenue without an attorney?
You could do it.
Do people do it?
Yeah.
Okay, so you can go to that step without an attorney.
Right.
It's a very informal proceeding, the Department of Revenue.
On the small claims appeals, you go to the tax court without an attorney.
Oh.
They have a small claims section.
Go ahead, Senator Trow. Are you finished?
Yes, thank you.
Senator Trow.
Jim, did you say that, or perhaps you didn't, but that the Department of Revenue has some kind of jurisdiction over the county assessor's operation? If a county assessor really messes up a county, can the Department of Revenue do anything about it?
As an example, if they get behind in the reappraisal cycle, they have the power to go in and to do the appraisals and to withhold funds from the county, like cigarette tax revenue.
My impression is a few years ago in Polk County that the department was not pleased with what was happening. Stepped in to do something. I don't know what
they did. We provided assistance to numerous counties throughout the state. I can think of projects that we carried on in Umatilla County, Polk County, Marion County.
For the record, will you identify who you are, please?
Oh, excuse me. I'm George Miller, Special Projects Officer with the Department of Revenue. And some of these projects that we go into with a cost share basis. Some that we never have enforced or gone into the operation of withholding cigarette pack monies or liquor money. It's been there as a club, and it's been a good one because the county courts will generally provide the funds in for the assessor to do the work that needs to be done.
One thing I think is unique, either one of you will start with this, Jim, or Mr. Miller can come in. Explain the function of how this court operates. It's rather a unique court, and back in Senator Hanna and I have looked at its operation for land use and a couple other issues, but it has a unique function. Explain how they travel the state and handle these tax cases.
Oh, you mean the hearings?
The hearings and the court proceedings.
Maybe George would do better.
George, would you do that? Why don't you just come up here, George? We're going to pick on you anyway, so you might as well get up front first.
That's fine.
Okay.
At the department level, when the taxpayer has received his orders from the County Board of Equalization, they appeal onto the Department of Revenue. Then we contact the taxpayer, tell them we've received the appeal, and a date will be set for the hearing. Generally, it's in the county seat of where the property is located. Unless the taxpayer indicates otherwise, that maybe their attorney is here in Salem, or if it's a rather large case, that they're having the case heard here in Salem, which we will do. But we are an agency that does travel the state. Our hearings officers go out into the county seats. And Oregon is also unique in the tax court level in that our tax court is truly a circuit court, in that the judge travels out into the county seats to hold hearings at various locations throughout the state.
The point is, the venue, whether it be at the department level or the task force level, can be at the local level, which does save a considerable sum of money. People are... Any questions on that? All right, Jim, you're underway.
Okay.
Don't go away, George. Why don't you just sit up here, and we may have other questions, okay?
Very good.
Please.
That was as much as I wanted to say about the administration. I just sort of wanted people to keep in mind the different actors you have.
What other parts of your presentation did you want to give us?
All we really had left was a little bit on data. So I think it's in your packets, right?
Yes. If you'll go to your packet, you'll find a rather lengthy group of papers that...
I only have three, so... I can't remember which one I told you to put on the top.
Historical data.
All right, the historical tax data. You can get an idea of the growth of property tax levies and compare them with the growth in corporate tax collections and personal tax collections, and also the property tax relief programs. And if you'll note there at the bottom line, those percentages show the average growth rate from 68. And for the corporate, it was 12.5%, for personal income, 13.8%. Property tax levies 9.8. That 9.8 does not, or that those levy, that levy figures you see there is not reduced by relief that's offered.
Neither by HARP or by
HARP or the 30%. And by the way, the HARP and the 30% include the renter payments in those relief figures. So,
you know, just looking here, Jimmy, you go to the property tax levies by county and type of district.
Yes.
I'm interested here. I look at Linn County. You go over to the cities and you show a 98.2% increase, almost doubling. Is that a result of tax bases, or what occurred there?
I don't know on the individual counties. Yeah, by the way, this was prepared by, normally we're able to get the department's data together, but because a lot of the counties were so late, we haven't been able to do this. This has been prepared by Oregon Tax Research, sitting back there. And they were nice enough to let us copy it and provide that to you. So I have not been down into those individual counties to look at those things because we didn't prepare this.
Well, you look at the county of Lincoln County, which I know is not exactly the most spendthrift group, and
right.
I see a 252% increase.
I understand that one is a tax base.
That was a tax base?
Yes.
Well, I would essentially think that that's what these large increases would look at. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
As you might note, there is that property tax levies and the corporate and personal collections are about equal. I'm getting to the point now. That didn't used to be the case. It used to be that property tax levies were substantially greater than the state collections and personal corporate income. Now they're getting up to the point where they're almost equal, and it's personal is even greater when you consider the, well, it depends on what you want to net the relief out of. You want to net the relief out of the personal because it's personal money that's gone back to the taxpayer as property tax refund. You want to net it out of the property tax. You can make different assumptions about that. All right, the other page beside the there was this levy page that Senator Day was talking about. One thing you may note, and you're probably already aware of, but it's always good to keep in mind, is that about two-thirds of the property tax levies are for schools. So the biggest factor in the property tax are school levies. In this case, it's about $1.2 billion, about $743 million of that is schools and ESDs, and another $56 million in community colleges. Then the other page there shows the value of taxable property and how that's grown since 1968. In the last couple of years, we've had a pretty large increases in true cash value, 25.4% in between 78 and 9, and 25.3, 79 to 80. Although, because of the assessed value limit, you can see that instead of 72.6 billion on true cash, the effect of the ratios was to reduce the assessed value to 62.6 billion. And then the graph there shows all that graphically and also shows that as the values increase, the average tax rate has fallen. Except in this last year, the average tax rate has now risen because the levy increase, which this year was about 17-18%, was greater than the increase in value. So the average tax rate grows. That's that dotted line.
Questions? Question, Senator Murrow?
If we didn't have the differentiation between true cash value and assessed value, which we added last session, would the tax rate have been approximately level?
No, it would have fallen because we had such a tremendous increase in value this time that even with an 18% levy increase, the rate still would have fallen.
So we would have had a continued downtrend.
That's right.
So you can say that reversal of the trend in the historic trend in the tax rate that we've had since about, 1969 or 70, a downward trend, the reversal is due entirely then to the change in the tax structure.
To the change in the value procedure, that's
yeah.
right.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, so I follow that question and ask if the change in the value procedure really didn't affect the amount of tax paid one way or the other.
It doesn't affect the levies at all.
Right.
So it does affect, the only thing it affects is that $11 million in shift that would have occurred onto the homesteads. So because we're on different ratios for homesteads and other property, that affects the shift, the burden of the tax on homesteads and other property. Because we had that, it's about $11 million.
Small amount of effect then on the total amount of taxes paid by homesteads? Would they have paid a little bit less than they would have otherwise been?
They paid $11 million less than they would have, and what they did pay this time was about 40% of the, well, I don't know, if you want to net out the tax relief, that would take a little bit of figuring. But it's on the order of $300 to $400 million. So it's $11 million out of
The amount of the assessments goes down, the rate goes up, but the total amount of taxes is a little little bit less than it would have been.
On homesteads. And a little bit more on the other properties.
You saved about 3% on this, is what you saved on the total.
Something like that,
as long as we understand.
Further questions? All right. Yes, Senator Monroe.
Is this the appropriate time to ask questions about the 30%, or are we going to get into that specifically later on?
Do you want to get into that now?
I know HARP is separate on the schedule. I think that should be expanded to property tax relief in general.
Well, let me just tell you what I'm thinking, and so you can come up with the statistics when we do come up with that. I'm interested in the maximum on the 30%, which is what, $700?
$800.
Okay, oh, it's $800.
$400
okay.
For renters.
Okay, the $800 maximum, I'm interested in that. I'm interested in how much that buys out in terms of the maximum value of a home in a typical district, in a high tax district, in a low tax district. I'm interested in what would happen to the cost of that program if that ceiling were lowered from 800 to say 500, or were lowered, you know, make it in $100 increments. You know, how much money would we save, and who would be paying it? Which home, you know, what would that do to value of homes and so on?
Okay.
Because I for one, am not willing to just ignore that possible source of additional funds. I'm not saying that I'm going to advocate changing that system, but I would like to see the statistics. I think that's something that this committee ought to consider. It's something certainly that I want to consider.
So I'll keep that in mind. Let me
go ahead, Jim.
That's as much as I had.
All right. Are there any questions so far on the various aspects of how we make up the ingredients of a property tax assessment? It's how we determine true cash value, the administration of it. On to a different subject here. If you have any of those questions or any information you'd like to have the staff prepare, I think Senator Monroe, you might find it helpful. The staff of this committee is very, very cooperative and helpful. I think you might want to go down and spend a little time with one of the staff members to go through that to see what that would do for you. And I think you might, and we'll still touch on it when we go into the orientation, but you might be helpful for them to arrive at some of those so you can articulate what you're driving.
I would just like to say that it's exciting for me to be back on this committee after being away from revenue and the revenue staff last session. It's exciting to work with the staff, the high level of competency of the revenue staff. I'm just, you know, really personally would like to thank you. Again, I had forgotten about how competent all you people were.
Okay, now you've got your posies, we'll get you later.
Okay.
Any other questions? All right. I think our next subject, if we follow our work plan, would be the inheritance and gifts tax. And Steve, you will just proceed ahead. What we'll try to do is let you cover a segment and then stop you and work you over a bit. It's the intention of the chair to adjourn this committee at 2:30. We'll do it promptly. And I hope you all will ask questions. I think that's very healthy. So. Slow down.
Steve Meyer, Legislative Revenue Office. I think I can be through all of it by 2:30. What's your questions?
Well, speed is not our real care right now. Okay. Go ahead.
I want to just go over the inheritance and gift taxes in a very broad, general form. I'm not the greatest expert on inheritance and gift taxes. If you, you know, want to get into some detail and technical terms, we're going to have to bring in some other staff people. But if we can keep it general today, I think we'll be all right. I have a research report that I'm not sure whether it's in your packet or not. It's there. Okay. Called the Summary of Inheritance and Gift Taxes. There's some examples in here that I'll refer you to, and we'll just kind of work through a situation. As you know, the 1977 legislature decided to phase out the inheritance and gift tax. There's usually two arguments that are given for having an inheritance tax. One is to try to avoid large concentrations of wealth being passed on from generation to generation. The other is to have the inheritance tax kind of serve as a backup to income taxes, so that if you have certain kinds of income that escape the income tax, they'll eventually be taxed with the inheritance tax at the time of of death. So apparently, 77, those arguments weren't sufficient to warrant keeping the inheritance tax. We have to go through several steps. The first is to decide what property is subject to inheritance tax when there's a death. Basically, for Oregon residents, it's all of their property in the state, and then their intangible personal property outside the state would be part of their this gross estate, anyway, to begin with. If there's property held in joint ownership, such as business property, only that portion that is owned or the interest of the decedent would be included in his estate. It wouldn't necessarily be all the property. So basically, it's the property then that the decedent has an interest in or owns outright, but there is an exception to this process, and that's the property held by husband and wife. And if the husband and wife have property that they own jointly and have right of survivorship in terms of it being automatic as to the spouse receiving the property upon the death of the other, then the law says that the property is owned jointly by both, or each have a 50% interest in it, so that when one
at our next meeting, our work plan, the personal income tax, and are there any questions or discussion from the committee before I adjourn the meeting?
Is it tomorrow?
Tomorrow at 1:30. Tomorrow is Thursday, is it not?
Yes.
All day.
All day. Well, then tomorrow at 1:30, we shall gather again, our ecumenical group, and go into the personal income tax. Any further discussion? Hearing none, the meeting's adjourned.
Sure, we're ecumenical.
I think so.